Testing, testing. I'm trying to see if the volume is all right for this recording. Okay, I think it's all right, and I'm going to state that my name is Virginia Berkey, and I was born on October 20th, 1927, in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. My early years of schooling in high school were through the Wauwatosa High School system, where I graduated in 1945. My high school years were set during the period of the war, and therefore I would say that it had sort of an influence on the behavior of all of us as high school students. Some of the typical things were the USO parties that were held in the local areas and often inviting the sailors from the nearby Great Lakes Training Center to our homes for a Sunday. A particular person of note during that period in my life was Dr. Carl Kasowitz. He was a pediatrician in the Milwaukee area, an Austrian, and had close social ties with the Pro Arte Quartet from the University of Wisconsin. He would invite members to his home after the Milwaukee concerts, and through them I had an interest in music that was stimulated. I was fortunate enough to be able to take private piano lessons from a very fine pianist, a teacher by the name of Lawrence Bernhardt, and he inspired me to go into the field of music. It was at that time that I felt that being a professional pianist was a little bit more than I could handle, so I thought one of the ways around this would be a music critic, and that of course would necessitate a journalism and a music major. With that thought in mind, I really didn't pick a school just known for that, but I chose to go to the University of Colorado for a year, and while I was there I did very poorly in school. I had 12 out of 15 credits that were failing, and therefore I was put on probation. It was after that experience, and I was homesick among other things, I decided that I wanted to go to the University of Wisconsin for a summer. I was tired of the type of student at the University of Colorado and found that many of them were just kind of playing around. It had a reputation to a degree for being a play school, which I wasn't too conscious of at that time. Anyway, I went to the University of Wisconsin in the summer and got turned on. I was told that being on probation, I should do well with my grades, which I did. I got 3 A's and took music classes and really found that that was the way I wanted to continue. So there was no thought once I had gotten to the University of Wisconsin that those were the types of experience that I wanted for myself. My decision to attend the University of Wisconsin was really based on the fact that the school had what I was looking for, in the sense that the journalism school was quite good, and also the music school. The other schools that I would have considered attending just didn't exist then, because once I had gone to the summer school, I saw that I liked that type of atmosphere. It was very different from Colorado. University of Wisconsin offered several different kinds of students, but I happened to fall in during the summer by living in a Swanson house. It was part of the, I think I'm saying these, Kronsage unit, and the girls at the Swanson house were mostly New Yorkers. They were Jewish girls, and it was my first opportunity to meet Orthodox Jews. I remember on Friday evening some of the girls could not drive in a car, and they were really quite Orthodox. One girl in particular I remember was the daughter of a rabbi, and she was able to tell many of the girls in the house about her background in being an Orthodox Jew. We got along very well, and I think that it was a great opportunity for me to become acquainted with Jewish girls of that background. I would say the house was about 70% Jewish girls. We ate next door at Kronsage, and we ate in a cafeteria. The food was excellent, and it went fairly well. There were never long lines, and of course we were right near the lake, so the whole atmosphere for a summer school was wonderful. Elizabeth Waters had been newly built and was there, as well as the opportunity to eat at the Wisconsin Union, to sit outside and enjoy the terrace and take our trays outside. And as I remember, Hoofers was in, I think that was the name of the organization that dealt with old canoes, and there were sailboats out on the lake, and it was just a wonderful atmosphere for a summer school. It was hard to really believe that I was going to school under such fine conditions. It was easy to walk around on campus and to walk downtown, to make the city, really, I felt that the city was a part of the university as well, because it was often a shopping area where you could go to buy clothes, go to buy books and things. I remember going to Rennebaum's and meeting foreign students, and that was a wonderful opportunity to meet foreign students eventually, where we went to the drugstore. Not that we couldn't go to the Union, but it was just a meeting place for many students. Going on, and I noticed in this outline form, financing your education. My education was completely financed by my parents all the way through. I never had to work or to have another job when I was at the university, at least while I was going to school there. You ask here, where did you live when you first moved to Madison? And I've explained that a little. And who was in charge at the dorms? I don't really remember. I do remember that there were rules that we had to be in. I think it was 10:30 at night. But there didn't seem to be a problem. I remember that later on when I moved, again, after the summer school experience, I moved to Ann Emory, and I lived there, and there were rules, and there were rules that we had to be in at 10:30 at night. That was a nice experience, but the house rules never seemed to be, we just considered that was part of going to the university. I do remember, I think the lady's name was Mrs. Moore. She was very strict, and she always made sure that the girls' feet were on the floor, and she would come down at 10:20 and start blinking the lights, and sometimes she got furious because people paid no attention to her. And she seemed to be a lady in control, but some of the girls didn't pay too much attention, and I would say that by 10:45, everybody was peacefully out. The board, of course, was included at Ann Emory. The food was fine. I then saw girls that got very fussy. I hadn't been used to being around people that were this fussy about food, and we'd have hard-boiled eggs or soft-boiled eggs they were supposed to be, and the girls, if they didn't like them, would go up and take three or four and crack them open. If they weren't to their liking, they would just leave them there. And I thought that was rather wasteful, and just an attitude of some of the girls. It was rather, the girls were rather different living in Ann Emory. They were different from the girls that were at the summer school living quarters. Another place I lived on campus, this is getting ahead of, was 515 House, which was right next to Ann Emory. That was a private house. There were rules there, of course, and we had to, again, be in at 10:30. But as I said, that never seemed to bother anybody. It just, I think it was 12:30 on the weekend. People just knew what the rules were, and that was all right. Nobody particularly complained about it. Going on to the fourth point here, five, the course of study. I did major in French. It was rather interesting why I majored in French. I had spent 6 years between Colorado and 6 years in school. I was taking music and journalism, and of course the two of them were demanding, and therefore it was taking me quite a long time in school. And I'll get to this in the next point. I had met somebody that was in the international club and had fallen very much in love with him, and we decided that we were going to get married. And since I had been in school 6 years, my mother asked me if I couldn't possibly get a degree. She wanted me to have a college degree since I'd been in school so long. So in looking over my course of study, it was considered that the best thing I could do would be to take my bachelor's with a major in French. My heart wasn't in it. I liked French, but it certainly was not, and eventually when I decided to get married, that really then I had to take a few more courses in theater. I do remember going to some of the parties. I can't remember the professor's name. We had parties, and there was quite a bit of drinking at the parties, and I remember one particular class where everybody, including the professor, had gotten quite drunk, and when he came to class the next day, nobody felt very good, and he let us know that he would leave the door to his classroom open, so in case anybody felt that they were going to get sick in class, they could run out the door. It was my first getting to know a professor on that social level at the on campus, and it amused me to see that he was as weak as everybody else when it came to certain of the drinking pursuits. I did not belong to the French house, but I did go over there. I went over there sometimes to eat, but I did not live there and was not really a member. I had some opportunities to meet different people there, but it wasn't really where I chose to spend my free time. My minor, of course, was in journalism and music, but it was really my major, which I turned around and took the French. My favorite classes outside my major and minor field of study, I remember having to take botany, and I liked botany very much because it was taught about 3:30 in the afternoon, and we had the privilege of walking around campus and identifying different plants, and I thought that was rather a exciting type of field study that we could do. Any bad classes bear mentioning? I really can't remember any. I just was so impressed. I do remember taking a class in English that was a class in Yates. It was held at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. It was the poetry of Yates had a lot of symbolism, and the professor was rather dull at times. And I do remember at that particular afternoon when I fell asleep and all my books fell on the floor, and the professor stopped completely talking. I woke up and he was looking at me, and I concluded that when I saw my papers and books on the floor that I had done something to upset him. He just stood there for a little while, and when he recovered, he went on. I'm going to also talk about Carl Paul Link now, who was the advisor. Link was really, his wife was a member, very active in the Progressive Party, but Dr. Carl Paul Link was the person who was willing to be the advisor to the Communist Party on campus. Since that party couldn't exist on campus without a university professor, everybody really was appreciative of the fact that he was willing to do that, because at that time he certainly put himself on the line to be willing to be a sponsor for that particular organization. In looking this over, I can see that there was some misunderstanding here when I mentioned Dr. Karl Paul Link, the advisor. He was the advisor for the Communist Party on campus and not my personal advisor at the university. Frankly, I don't remember who my advisor was. Must not have had much of an influence on me as a student. There's nothing personal I can remember about it. I don't even remember who this was. You ask about issues such as class size, lab space. I don't know what teaching assistants. Size and the quality of the university. Having come from the University of Colorado, where I had at one time had a class of 1,000 students in a big laboratory, in a big auditorium, this wasn't, I didn't notice that the class size was particularly, well, there was one class that probably a number of students will mention, and that was Economics 1A with Kikover. That was probably the poorest class I had at the university. He was a man who had written the textbook, and what we would do is he would use sentences right out of his textbook, and we would just sit in the class and take the book and underline what he said. One funny thing about his class is that we used to give him a skyrocket, the sis, boom, ah type of thing when he'd come in, and he was the type of man who thought that we seriously meant that and that we were praising him in some way, quite the opposite. But I would say that he was probably the poorest professor and yet supposedly an outstanding person and wrote the definitive Economics 1A textbook that was used all over the United States in different universities. I don't feel that any of the classes at that time were large in number. I don't remember any. Some of the classes were probably 30 and 40. French classes, of course, were much smaller. In terms of them having bearing on the quality of the instruction, I always felt that we were able to talk with the professors, and that very few classes did we have. The only class I remember a teaching assistant for was in botany, when he used to come in and we used to have to do drawings and use the microscope, and he would be in the lab where we were doing that. But otherwise, I remember very few teaching assistants. I always had the feeling that I could talk to the professors and that the classes were of a size that made me feel that I was not just sitting there and part of a great big lecture. The quality of instruction I received at the University of Wisconsin, I would say, was excellent. I went on to get a degree from the University of Minnesota. I have a Bachelor of Science from the University of Minnesota in Minneapolis, and I felt there was no comparison between the two schools. The University of Wisconsin provided a very stimulating atmosphere. If one wanted to take advantage of it, there were so many different opportunities on campus that, of course, I was a younger person then and lived as a student, and when I was at the University of Minnesota, I was married and didn't have the opportunity to really be a total part of the environment. I lived at home and went to Minnesota. Not to criticize their quality of instruction, but when I was at Madison, worlds were just opening up to me. The next part, the clubs and organizations, that was what I felt was excellent at Madison. I really liked the India organization. What happened is, how I got into that was a friend that I had met. I had met this man, Ram Madiman. He was a student at Wisconsin, an interesting person. He was a Brahmin, and he had come from India and was sent by his parents. He came from a wealthy family, and they sent him. When he lived in India, he was a very leftist person, and this irritated his parents, who thought that if they sent him to the University of Wisconsin, where he got his PhD in agriculture, he would get some of this out of his soul. and it worked quite the opposite. While he was at Madison, he was an active person in the political organizations at Madison. It was Rahm who lived with, at that time, the man who was to be my future husband, Charles Berkey. He was a chemistry major and got his Bachelor of Science in chemistry. Because the purpose of the India Association was really to get, there were so many Indian students on campus that we must have had, I would say 75 to 100. And it was because there were so many that they wanted to sort of join together. We met at the union, and we had social things there. In the evening we would have food and a speaker, and just it was for fellowship. I would say that was the main purpose of that organization. We didn't really discuss things relating to India. We made friends there, and eventually my friend Rahm became a person who not only was active in the organization, but he got into the International Club as well. And the International Club was an organization that sort of had the same purpose. It was just to get all the students that came from all over the world together and to have dances. And that was the whole purpose of the organization, to be social. There was nothing political about it. The members were very diverse backgrounds, and I don't think politics would have been something that at that time we would have gotten into at all. While there, Rahm met another person, a Norwegian girl, by the name of Eva Holtzlarsen, and he fell very much in love with Eva, and it was then that the four of us, Eva and Rahm and Charles Berkey and myself, thought of this wonderful idea that we would go back to India, save India. Rahm was going to be in agriculture, Eva was in home economics, Charles Berkey was in chemistry, and I was going to go along at that point, I guess, for the company of all of them. But we had great ideas for going back to India. Not long after Rahm was still in school, but he went back to India for a visit, and when he was there, his parents, I'm sure, had some influence on him. He wrote Eva the letter that things would be all off, and he could not go through with his marriage. It broke her heart, but I'm sure at that point it was very good in the long run. I met other people in the International Club who won, as Stephanie Rose and Eric Grunseth. Eric was from Sweden, and Stephanie was one time had been a German Jew who left the country and ended up in, I think she was from Buenos Aires. She was from South America. I think she was living in Brazil, and she came to the university and met Eric. They eventually got married, and that didn't last too long. I had the good fortune of seeing Eric Grunseth in Cleveland about in the 1970s one time at a party, and was absolutely surprised to find that the world was small enough that Eric Grunseth ended up in Cleveland at a party. The International Club at that time, I would say, attracted students on campus, and that's what made, there was a feeling of the students who were the Greeks and those who were in the Independent Association. And I would say there was sort of a looking down upon the students by many, who felt that athletics had just become too important to some of these people, as well as the fraternities. I also had the opportunity of going to some of the Jewish fraternity parties. And I found out that at that time I was very surprised to find out that there were some very unintellectual Jews who used to like to have wild beer parties, and they were as wild as some of the others. another experience that I remember is Felix Wasserman being the first Jew accepted into the chemistry honorary fraternity, and that was surprising to me that a chemistry honorary fraternity would have discriminated against somebody like Felix Wasserman. That's something that I wouldn't have known had I not known Felix personally and saw that that was a problem. I might mention that the fraternity had some kind of fun parties, and we were used to get Dr. Carl Paul Link, who also was invited to these parties because of his, I'm sure, reputation as being such an outstanding professor in his field. And he was invited to these parties, and it was his wife who also was there. And she, I remember once somebody came up to Dr. Link and told him that some kids were in the other room fooling around. They didn't say exactly what they were doing, but he just wanted to know if their feet were pointing in the same or in opposite directions. And I've always remembered that, thinking that that was strange for such a, not strange, but it seemed to me at that point in my young life to think that that was a very outspoken remark for such a person like Dr. Link to have made. Going on, you've asked me about the student publications. Yes, I read the Daily Cardinal. It was around. You could get it at the drugstores, and it was around places. I thought its quality was excellent. I don't remember too much necessarily about its point of view from that, but it certainly was not too representative of the Greeks at that time, and it seemed to be more part of the independence. It commented on different things going on in the world. It was more than just a student newspaper. I don't remember much about the Badger, and I'm not too sure that I remember that at all. About Helmut Heckscher and Felix, we dreamed up the idea of establishing a literary magazine and realized that there was opportunities for news articles and that type of thing that the newspaper did, but there was not really much for a literary opportunity. I think I can't tell you the name of the professor, but he was somebody in the German department. He agreed to be our advisor. We used to meet in the corner in the Quonset hut that was near the library. Of course, that library has changed to the State Historical, I believe, and we met there and would have meetings. Our role was to, my role in it was really at that time to try to get the thing off the ground, and we used to go out to some of the dorms and try to talk to the vets and have meetings where we would, it was really a question of selling the magazine and getting enough people that we thought might subscribe to it. It never got off the ground because we didn't feel that there were enough students on campus that would support it. And of course, we didn't have the money. And at that time, we hadn't gone to the university to really get a background from a backing from the university as far as finances. So that's the main reason that the magazine didn't succeed, because we never got that far in terms of pushing it. One thing I will say, the magazine, the newspaper, the Cardinal, did give opportunities for being writing up some of the concerts that were on campus. And there was a student there by the name of William K. Archer. There's a William K. Archer, as I understand it, that's a very famous critic, but we had a student on campus whose name was William K. Archer. The coincidence of such a thing seems amazing, but that's the way it was. Anyway, William K. Archer used to do most of the write-ups for the Cardinal, and I got to do one for the Pro Arti Quartet, which was quite a thrill for me to think that I could. And I remember they played the Schubert, the Trout Quintet, which I have always had kept in a special place in my memory because I did write it up for the Cardinal. And just to be able to criticize the Pro Arti Quartet was quite a privilege. They also offered a class on campus that was the quartet of Mozart, Haydn, and Beethoven in the music department. That was a special privilege because members of the Pro Arti Quartet would come and illustrate themes and really made the class what it was. And it was quite an experience for a student to be with these musicians and yet to feel that they were taking a class at the university at the same time and getting credit for it. Going on to the next thing here, leisure time. I felt that I had a fair amount of leisure time. I enjoyed going to the Arboretum. We would bicycle out to the Arboretum. Also, Picnic Point was a place that I liked to walk out there, and I liked to spend, especially in the early evening, between 5 and 7, when it was about the sunset time. And it was really not very crowded. The most number of people you would meet walking along that path, you might not meet more than 20, 25 people, which I suppose all that has changed, and Picnic Point is not what it once was. Our friend Ram Madiman, who was in the Indian Club, had gotten a car. His parents wanted him to bring back a car to India, so he got a car with a right-hand drive, and it was a Hudson car, and we used to take that around campus, and Ram sometimes would let us drive that. You asked about the restaurants. I remember one particular, the Flame on State Street, that was kind of a nightclub. And it was, I'll tell you a little bit about my the Green Circle program. I'm not too sure if it was the Green Room. I think it was the Green Room. Maybe I misspoke that it was the Green, but the Green Room. At the Union, they had many different artists come to town. And these artists had to be met. They had to be then brought back to the university, and they stayed usually at the Union, but not always. And these people needed someone to sort of socialize with them, and that's how I had the opportunity of meeting some really outstanding artists. One in particular, of course, was Horowitz, that certainly has left his mark on the piano world. And these people, as I say, were artists at the university and played always in the student union. Another use of free time and leisure time were seeing films at the union. They had very good foreign films. That was where I first saw Les Enfants de Paradis. Really enjoyed the types of films that they showed at the union. I can't remember some of the other hangouts. Of course, there was the one that sells the cabin, I think it was, on State Street, where everybody got a brat and a beer and kind of stood around outside. It was most unlikely place because there was a place inside where you got the brat and the beer, and then you went out in the back, and it wasn't really finished at all, and people just kind of stood around and talked. The atmosphere was almost like standing outside in a concrete alley, but that's where everybody liked to go, and they certainly spent a lot of time at that place. I think its name was The Cabin. I spent a lot of time at the Memorial Union, and of course, just sitting around in the Paul Bunyan Room and talking. That's what I did there. We talked. It was a place that students went between classes, and I found at that time that nobody ever, that I ever saw, drank too much beer at the Union. I never saw anybody that was the least bit. And when I hear today that for a long time after that, people say, you mean you went to the University of Wisconsin, they sold beer in the Union? And it was just like you went to the Union to have a glass of beer, just like people might have a Coke, I guess, at other universities. I don't know, but I certainly never saw it abused, at least at the university. It says here, what about dating? Where might you typically go, or what might you typically do on a date? Since I was not a very typical student, I often didn't go on a date as such. We might go to something at the just go over the university to the student union and talk, or might go to, as I say, a union movie at the Union. Did a lot of bicycling and recreational things outside, as I say, just hiking and walking. The role of religion in my campus experience was non-existent. I was not involved with any of the campus religious houses. Active in the Progressive Party, yes, the Progressive Party on campus wasn't as much as it was really. There was a small group on campus, but there were more people in town, and the Progressive Party on campus was so tied in with the Communist Party and the issues. Some of the issues that we got involved in. There were a group of migrants and migratory workers in Madison, the Mazomani, I think that was their name, workers. We got involved with them trying to do something about the deplorable living conditions. We had a parade. We went up around the state capitol building. I remember women with baby buggies and just really trying to get involved with that. That was a chance to put your party politics into activity and do something for these people. It was through that Mazomani work in the Progressive Party that Charles Berkey then met a fellow named Willie. Willie was an illiterate. It's the first illiterate I had been close or known about in my life, and he used to come over. We lived on Clymer Street. This was probably about my senior year, and Willie used to come over and get lessons, and we had gotten books from the U.S. government. It was difficult to find books how to teach people that weren't on a second or fourth grade level, and the U.S. government had books that we had gotten and were teaching Willie. One of the problems with Willie was that he couldn't look for a job in the newspaper because he couldn't read it, and then we would tell him that he would walk over to Park Street, he could get a bus to go to these different jobs that we would find for him for an interview. But he couldn't read what was on the bus, and he couldn't read the street signs. So that was my first experience in working with somebody that was illiterate and seeing the many problems that they have. I don't know whatever happened to Willie, but he eventually stopped coming, and I know we no longer kept in contact with him. Another thing that we did is eventually during my senior year, I was married in August and did not graduate until January. And while we were on campus, we had made some great energetic plans to take a trip to South America. We really wanted to go all the way to the tip of South America, and we bought two Harley motorcycles, two small Harleys, and we used to ride these around. We would take trips outside of Madison, and I remember going over to the the border with Iowa to the Mississippi, and we would take some trips on our motorcycles, sort of really trying to learn how to ride these cycles. And we never rode them much on campus or around there at all, but we did spend some time, as I say, in my senior year riding these cycles once we decided to make this trip. We did eventually take off on the trip, and we got as far as southern Mexico, but that's as we had trouble with the people in Mexico really looking them over to see whether or not we used to take them in and want them evaluated in terms of being able to go through rough country and so on. And we found that their mechanics weren't very good, and we weren't that good at doing all the things we needed to do for our cycles. Besides, we were running out of money and getting tired. So the trip, not relating to this paper, sort of ended, and we came back to this country. One of the questions here was, is there anything that bears mentioning concerning your political activities on campus? Yes, I would say so, because one of the things we tried to do is we were with a man by the name of Clarence Kalin, who had been a member of the Abraham Lincoln Brigade, and he came back to this country and lived down on South Park, and we were trying to get more of get the students that were in the Independent Association more familiar with the outside, what we thought was sort of the outside world and other activities. And they used to come down to, we got some students to come to parties and, at a laundry down there. Can't think of the name of the laundry, but it was run by blacks, and there weren't many students that socially got to know black people and would be going to parties. So it was sort of tending to be a mixture of, I guess you would say, trying to integrate the campus type of students that were willing to come to political activities, say, on South Park Street and meet the people more like the Kalins. Oh, the Taliaferros. That's the man who had the laundry, the Taliaferros. And they had parties where they would serve chitlins and things like this, which were certainly unusual for me, having grown up in a very above-middle-class environment in Wauwatosa, Wisconsin. The prevailing attitudes concerning alcohol, it was all right. It was certainly acceptable. I saw the Greeks on campus. Well, they had some real fraternity parties where beer was the only thing I saw there. Tobacco, I guess people just assumed that one could smoke and do whatever they wanted to in terms of tobacco. It was freely used by some people, but and drugs, I never heard the word or thought about drugs and saw any use of it. It was just non-existent, at least as where I was concerned, and I think I certainly would have heard about drugs being used by people had they been used. Athletics, I really can't discuss it very much. I didn't follow. I was often at the Union on Saturdays when activities were going on, and or at the Union, because there weren't many people over at the Union, but I just never had anything to do with any of the athletic events. Although occasionally in high school, my parents had driven me to Madison to go to a football game there just as an experience, because they wanted to go for some particular reason to games at Madison. Point 10, discrimination. Were you ever discriminated? Never. I was never discriminated against in my experience at Wisconsin. And was I aware of anyone who might have been? Not really. In fact, it was almost, I remember several black kids in the music school And the attitude was that it was almost a privilege to be able to go out with them. However, when I was in my French class, it was in a Quonset hut down on State Street, and sitting next to me in my class was a black girl. It was my first chance to start talking with a black girl personally and to sort of make friends with her, and we did. We made friends, and I remember the afternoon I invited her to go back to, I think I misspoke. I said I lived at Ann Emery. I lived at Langdon Hall, and I asked her to go back to Langdon Hall with me. We got there, and I lived up, I think it was the fifth floor or something, and she came up to my room with me, and I found out later that the other girls in the dorm, the house there, Langdon, were really upset about this, and they wondered why I'd done this and what motive I had for bringing her back. All this just shocked me because I had been very naive about any kind of discrimination and certainly didn't see that they would have any reason to want to discriminate against her. They knew nothing about her except at that time that she was black. In terms of the general discrimination on campus, I certainly didn't feel any discrimination against me as a woman. I mentioned about the Jews. I didn't see any discrimination against out-of-state students or people with a particular lifestyle or people with disabilities. Again, I think I protected myself from, and I'm I think I protected myself from these people because I was really not a part of the Greeks and the students that would be more apt to come from backgrounds where discrimination would have perhaps been more appropriate behavior for them growing out of their particular experience at home. You spoke about campus personalities, and there's one I remember in particular, but in terms of the dean and dean of men and the dean of women or students, I don't feel that I really had much to do with any of them. And in terms of the president of the university, I certainly don't feel that I even remember his name and that other students talked about him or said anything about him. One student I do remember in particular was Steve Sherwin, who was a business major. He was born in, he was a German who went to Switzerland due to the fact that they left during the Nazi era. And he ended up in Switzerland. His father was a prominent businessman, I believe had something to do with the railroad industry. He came to New York eventually and on to the University of Wisconsin. He was, as I say, a business major and was a sort of a character in terms of the library and the union, where he was seen often always carrying his New York Times and his umbrella, his long black cane-like umbrella, and he always wanted to keep his shoes neat. And so on. So he would often wear rubbers on days that it wasn't particularly rainy or snowy, but he didn't want to slip. And he would carry his umbrella around often as like a pointing stick when he would be talking about something or wishing to make a point. Steve, I'm sure, went on after he left the University of Wisconsin to do something in the business world. He's the only person I can think of as a particular character. Felix Wasserman was not really a character. He was because of his name, of course, everybody knew who Felix was, and it was his father who was the Wasserman of the Wasserman test. Helmut Heckscher certainly was another student who was a German, lived in Milwaukee at one time, and Helmut was a, he went on to work for Battelle Institute, and I'm sure he did well in whatever particular field he chose. He was brilliant in physics as well as he was in the arts and science field where I had the privilege of meeting him. My career goals when I graduated from the university were almost nil. I did not really, as a woman then, have any idea that I would go out and work for a living. I had graduated in French and never wanted to use it. Really didn't feel that a language major at any time, unless you were going to use the language, had much meaning, and several times I felt that it was a means to an end. I did, however, go to the University of Minnesota, as I said before, and get my career goals changed. I took a Bachelor of Science degree with an English major then and went on to teach middle school. I just retired 3 years ago and thoroughly liked teaching of middle school, particularly eighth graders, and I know that's most unusual, but I taught English, and I feel that the quality and scope of education I received at Wisconsin made me have many, many experiences that my other teachers did not have, and really the quality and scope of the education that I received, privileges of at the Wisconsin Union, as I mentioned before, films, artistic opportunities in terms of music, and the small classes where I could get to know the professors. I just can't say enough for the quality and scope of the education I received at the University of Wisconsin. I also wanted to take this opportunity for thanking you for allowing me to do this. I've hope that I haven't rambled on and that my comments and observations may be of some use. I won't bring this tape to an end right now because perhaps I'll think of some other things that I just might add. As again, I say thank you for this opportunity.